These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I'm now going to read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting for our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book study, and as a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we are continuing with steps 8 and 9, part 2, and we're welcoming here Rodney and Steve, who are going to share their experience, strength, and hope with us tonight. And if you all would just identify yourselves and tell us what groups you're from and your sobriety date.
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Rodney, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September the 1st, 2004. I'm a member of the Joys of Recovery home group. We meet on Thursday nights in Chesapeake, and I have a sponsor, and my sponsor has a sponsor. Thanks.
Hi, everybody. My name is Steven. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Friday night open discussion meeting that meets in St. Paul's Episcopal Church in greater downtown Suffolk. My sobriety date is September 18th, 1997, and is honestly and truly by the grace of God through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And all you folks are the reason that I'm sober today. Thanks.
Great. Well, we really appreciate you coming out tonight to be with us. So we're going to start on page 80. And I'm going to read a paragraph, and then Rodney's going to share on it, and then Steve will pick it up. Page 80, the chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we're mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. And after a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs, or their equivalent, for something besides liquor. Perhaps he's having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we might say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he's married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Rodney.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm going to disappoint you. I didn't have any secret and exciting affairs. on my way over here, I was having this conversation with myself. I said, going to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous to talk about, you know, what the steps 8 and 9 mean to me. And for the most part, you know, relationships. And you know, honesty and humility, so one part of me says, well, what do you know about relationships? And the other part of me says, well, you got married 12 years ago yesterday. And then I answer myself, yeah, but that was to your ex-wife. So you know, I was never able to string enough days or years together in a relationship to want to go outside. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I certainly had some domestic troubles. The reason I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and became willing to take some suggestions was my ex-wife had left me. And I had been to Alcoholics Anonymous 10 years prior to that, and I never took any suggestions. I never got a sponsor. Never worked the steps, I left. And the domestic troubles that I was having when I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, they gave me the willingness to get involved, and with the suggestion of a marriage counselor. And it was because I decided to get honest, I was terrified of being alone. And you know, it tells us that, you know, alcoholics are tortured by loneliness. And you know, as I look back my whole life, I could always validate myself if I was in a relationship. You know, that was something that propped me up and convinced me in my head that I was worth something to someone, even if it was the wrong relationship. You know, it didn't matter. And so, you know, again, I never, you know, I never found the girl who understood outside of, you know, a relationship that I was in. I was too busy trying to manipulate the girl that I was with. And it talks about the paragraph we just read. And after a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. And my ex-wife and I were together for 6 years, and then we got married, and it lasted 2 years. But during that entire 8 years, I was suffering from untreated alcoholism, and I didn't even know it. And I'm sure she was, you know, worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative there at the end. And the reason that I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, quite honestly, was to get her back and to fix my marriage. And that didn't work, but thankfully. So that's all I have.
Mm-hmm. Hi, my name's Steve. I'm an alcoholic. I went to my very first AA meeting in the fall of 1975. I was invited to go. I was told it was guest night. And I don't remember a whole lot about that meeting other than the coffee and the cookies were over in that corner. But I must have heard something, because almost 20 years later is when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for me. Talk about domestic troubles. My first ex-wife, I got married when I was 16 years old. She was my high school sweetheart who ended up pregnant. And we had a beautiful baby daughter. And we stayed married for just under 3 years before she became tired of me doing the things that I was doing. I wasn't a very responsible person. I wasn't a very responsible father. I was mentally abusive, physically abusive, spiritually abusive. And she did the best thing that she could do, and that was to get away from me. I didn't realize at that time that alcoholism already had me in his grips. I drank ever since I can remember, 12, 13 years old. You know, just going out and getting somebody to buy me something or whatever, and you know, staying drunk. The longest period of time from that time I can remember drinking, the longest period of time I can remember staying sober is when I was in a 30-day stint in boot camp in 72. That was the longest period of time I can remember being sober without having anything to drink until the time I came into Alcoholics Anonymous in 1997. That marriage, of course, ended in divorce. And during that short marriage, there were times of infidelity. I was 16 years old. I married, fearful, God Almighty, fearful of having a responsibility of a wife and a baby. And I was not home very often. I ran. When I went to that, my father was the one who invited me to go to that meeting after we were. I had gotten out of the service, and I went to go live with him while I was going to college. Some things happened, and I ended up leaving that house and moving back down to Norfolk. There comes a time later on in what we're going to read, I'll tell you about the other part of that, but you know, there was always that then I got married again to my second wife, Patty, who that relationship was just a little bit better and lasted a little bit longer, but the same type of behaviors I was exhibiting still existed. I was still a full-fledged drinking every day, only concerned about myself, not really concerned about her at all. Working, my mantra was, I work hard and we'll play hard. You know, I had a good job, made plenty of money, what are you worrying about? our relationship got further and further apart. She got colder and colder. And that marriage, we had another baby, beautiful baby daughter. and that marriage too ended in divorce. And that's how it went for a while. My alcoholism and my drinking ruined a lot of the relationships that I was ever involved in with the opposite sex because of my my selfishness and self-centeredness. We'll just leave it at that. It was when I was when I felt ill ease or I felt any type of pressure, you know, in the marriage, I would have to, you know, I would want to run and go seek comfort someplace else where I wouldn't have to go back to it, if you want, you know. So that's how it was for a long time. And it was no wonder that they ended up doing what was best for them. And, you know, thank God for this step that that it gives us an opportunity to be able to go back and set those things right later on in life. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. Thanks.
Okay, we're on to page 81. Whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. If we're sure our wife does not know, should we tell her? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we have been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should. Admit our fault, not we should tell her.
Yeah.
She may insist on knowing all the particulars. She'll want to know who the woman is, where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person. We're sorry for what we've done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found this the best course to take.
Again, you know, I don't have any experience in making amends to, you know, my wife that I had been in a long-term marriage with. But, you know, what I'll say on this is I, for some strange reason, I would always, whenever I got involved in a relationship, I would always want to know these females' history and, you know, where she been and how many times has she been involved with somebody and so forth, but I never was willing to share mine, you know? And, you know, but again, I don't have any experience in you know, making amends to an ex-wife where I've gone out and had an affair, so I really can't, you know, share with on this paragraph. Thanks.
My name's Steve. I'm an alcoholic. I can.
Make it a waste.
The I've got to be honest here. Yeah, it wasn't an easy thing going to either one of my first or second ex-wife and letting them know, you know, about these things. But it was something I know I needed to do in order to be able to stay sober. I needed to clear up my side of the street, and I needed to be completely honest and open about what was going on. When I went to I never had to go into any great detail, and they never were concerned with who, what, where, when. It was just a matter of fact that I was, you know, unfaithful. And that was enough. And for me to be able to, you know, put it straight with them and let them know, you know, if there was anything I could do to be able to set the matter straight for them, I'd be willing and wanting to do that. And in both instances about that topic, they just said that neither one of them, by the way, had any suspicions that I was out messing around. So it was good. It wasn't, they had an idea, but they didn't have any proof, I should say. But and I wasn't going to give them any proof then either. But it was just a matter of the fact that I was coming clean with it, and that they, you know, that they appreciated what I was doing, and that, you know, they wished me well and said, you know, live your life, be happy. And I'll leave it at that part at that.
Okay. Okay, we're at page 82. If we have no such complication, there's plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say, the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he's yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents, whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today and would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He's like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?
I did, you know, I had the opportunity to make amends, you know, to my my daughter's mother. And she and I were never married, but we were together for several years. And I also had the opportunity to make amends to my own mother. You know, I made the list in step eight. And first of all, my sponsor and I got together, and in the beginning, he had me define harm, and not harm as Webster's definition of harm, but harm as what I thought harm was. And then he and I got together and came up with you know, an understanding of what harm was, and what we came up with was that basically it was stealing someone's emotional sobriety. And there were a lot of people in my life that loved me and cared deeply for me my whole life, and they were the ones that I harmed. And so I made this list, and he also had me write down exactly what the harm was that I felt I had done. And then in another column, he had me write how I would feel just as I thought it if that were done to me. And so it really put these things into light. You know, if somebody did that to me, and I was encouraged not to hold back, you know, my thoughts and my emotions when I wrote this down, if this had happened to me, if this person had done this to me. So we went through the list, and he and his sponsor picked the amends that I was to make. One of the amends was to my daughter's mother. And my daughter's mother and I were together for, like I said, 3 or 4 years. And, you know, I was just a total wreck when we were together. I had gotten drunk driving. My daughter was very young, 2 years old. And I was just doing my own thing, you know, without the rights, regards, or privileges of anyone else, as it talks about in the book, you know. And she got tired of that fairly quickly, it about 2 years, you know. And so she moved away. She moved 4 hours away with my daughter. And you know, I blame it on God, you know. God, how could you do this to me? How could you take my daughter away from me? And I maintained an exceptional relationship with my daughter. For 14 years, her mother and I met halfway between here and Roanoke, basically, every third weekend so I could get my visitation. And we missed probably 5 times in 14 years. Her mother did a big part. She showed up with, you know, she did more than I did because she had another child that she had to tote along or whatever. But when it came time to make amends, I traveled there and I called in advance, and she was married. I, you know, asked her for 30 minutes of her time, and her husband got extremely suspicious. It was a very weird situation, quite honestly. He didn't want me to talk to her one-on-one, and I told him it was nothing about me. You know, it was, I had to, you know, I just had to talk to her. And so we met, and, you know, my sponsor and I, we discussed how I was going to make these amends, and she was actually my last amends that I made. And, you know, basically, you know, I told her I was trying to get my life in order. And, you know, I had harmed her and when we were in a relationship. And you know, I asked her to forgive me. I didn't say I was sorry. I asked her to forgive me. And I was taught that sorry is how I feel, you know. I told people I was sorry a lot. And it didn't matter, you know. I asked her to forgive me, and that was difficult. And Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me in the previous steps before 8 and 9 to forgive myself. And I learned how to forgive myself before I could ask somebody else to forgive me, because I was my worst critic. But so I show up and I asked her for this time, and you know, I asked her to forgive me, and I said, if there's anything in the world that I can do to make it right, tell me what I can do. And then I shut up. and she said something like, don't talk to me like that. And then she changed. I could tell she appreciated it, and she said she forgave me. And you know, this paragraph also talks about, you know, our mothers, and I had the opportunity to make amends to my mother, and other individuals in my family, and you know, I've been through so many changes as a result of this program and the actions in this program and getting involved. And I was the black sheep of the family when I was growing up. I was the one that, there were myself and I have three brothers, and I was the one that was always getting in trouble, and they were always worried about and always bailing out and this and that and the other. And you know, today that's not the situation. I made amends to my mother, and you know, I also made amends to one of my brothers that I'm the closest to, and he said something that was very important to me that always stick with me. He said, you used to be the one I was the most worried about. Now you're the one I'm the least worried about, because I have some other drinkers in my family. And I'll never forget that. And then there was one other amends that I was asked to make that was difficult for me. None of this I could have done without the faith that I gained in the previous steps. None of it. I made an amends to a total, it would appear to have been at the time, a total stranger. I had stole something from this lady probably 20 years or more prior, at least, maybe 30 years, you know. And yeah, little old me stole something. I know that's hard for you all to believe, but anyway. And so I went up, and I'll never forget this either. These making amends through the actions of this program, just they've left indelible impressions that I'll never, ever forget. I went to church that day. And I left church, and I had to go make this amends. And I knew exactly where the people lived. And it's funny because for me, when I started really believing in the higher power, God, I stopped believing in coincidences. And so I'm driving to this house, and I knew exactly where it was at. The people still live there and all. And I turn the corner, and I look up, and there's a car coming. And the license plate says something like, trust God. you know? And I'm like, I can do this, you know? I don't know if that's exactly what it says. I should have written it down, but, you know? And I said to myself, you know, many, many things have happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I pray, I say, God, I'm real dumb. Make it real clear, you know? And he does. And so I knock on the door, and I let these people know who I am, and they're welcoming. And I said to the gentleman who answered the door, I said, you know, I have to talk to your wife. And, of course, he was concerned. And she comes out and says, no, we're getting ready to go on a trip. We can't do this. And I said, darn, you know. And she says, wait, this is going to bother me the whole time I'm on this trip. What is it? So they invited me in their house, and he walked out of the room, and I told her, I said, look, you know, 25 years ago, I don't know, or whatever, I stole your purse. It was on your car, and we were out, and it was dusk, and we saw it as an opportunity to get some quick cash, and I stole it, you know. And I said, you know, I hope you can forgive me for that. I'm asking you to forgive me for that. And if there's anything at all I can do to make it right, I'm here to do it. And then I shut up again. It's real important. Because if I keep talking, I'm going to start rationalizing, manipulating. You can bet that. But there was another guy with me, and, you know, I had all this stuff. I'm ready to roll here. I got a story, you know. I'll stop right at the point where it starts to make me look bad. You know, the rest of it's up to you to figure out. But she said, you know, I remember that. And there were some pictures in there. You know, that's the thing I missed the most. The rest of the stuff was irrelevant. And she said, I forgive you. She said, you know what? I have a son that's in prison for alcohol and drug addiction. And she said, I wish she'd find Alcoholics Anonymous like you found Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, ma'am, the only thing I know to do today is just pray for him, and I'll do that for you. And the gentleman came back out, and they said, we'd like for you to come back and see us. Come back and see us anytime you like, anytime you're in the neighborhood, come back and see us. And I've seen him out in public, and I had lunch with the man one day. I just ran into him, and we had lunch. But that was an interesting amends that I had to make. So thanks.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. The similarities when you make that list, at least that Rodney was talking about. You know, before I was attempted to make any of my amends, I ran and passed my sponsor, and we sat and talked. We sat down and talked about it. And there was some on the list that he scratched off. He says, yeah, nah. But there's a couple big ones. You know, you can imagine, you know, being young and 16 years old, married with a baby, the turmoil that I created in her life. And, you know, and then when she got divorced, when we got divorced, you know, her life was, you know, she was only 18 years old at the time with a baby, and I had completely pretty much abandoned that situation and that relationship. Coming into Alcoholics Anonymous and having an opportunity to be able to set those matters right is a great gift. You know, and I've learned that early on in Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm graced by God to be able to take these things that I've done in the past and set the matter straight the best I know how. When it came time to make those amends, her name is Janice, my first wife. She was one of the first ones on the list. And it talks about it in A Vision for You, how we used to go back through our lives trying to recapture those old times and rekindle those thoughts and those feelings. And that's what I did for years and years and years. I would try to relive those good times that I thought were good while I was out there drinking. After we were divorced and I had moved away, and she had moved back in with her parents, I used to drive past, when I used to go back to Philadelphia where she lived, I would drive past her house and in my drunkenness and trying to get a glimpse of her and/or my daughter to see what she had grown up to, you know, to look like. Kimberly was born in 1972, and it wasn't until I got sober in 1997 that I had an opportunity to be able to reacquaint myself with her. When it came time for me to make my amends to my first wife, I talked to my sponsor about it. I told him what I was about ready to do, and he said, "Yeah, okay, you're ready, go ahead." Yeah. And I got on the phone. I couldn't remember her new maiden name, because when I was living, after I gotten out of service and I went to live with my father, I got some legal papers in the mail where she had gotten remarried and her new husband wanted to adopt her. So my pride and my ego at that time was, you know, I kicked up the heat of my heels and I said, "Ain't no way, you know, blah, 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 blah. Stupid." So my father sat me down and talked some sense into me, and it wasn't very long that I went ahead and I consented to that adoption. When I came in Alcoholics Anonymous and I was able to sit down and get ready to make that amends, I got on the phone and I couldn't remember. I mean, I got online because I couldn't remember her maiden name. So I did a name search. I remembered her mother's name, you know, her first maiden name. And I always got along really well with my girlfriend's mother for some reason or another. So I got online and I found her and I dialed the number, and this frail voice answered the phone. And when I told her who I was, I thought I had given that poor woman a heart attack, as they had been told 10 years prior to that I had been killed in a motorcycle accident. And I assured her that I wasn't dead, and I explained to her, you know, what I was trying to do in a general way, and that I would like for her to be able to let Janice know that I'd be wanting to get in touch with her. So, and I gave her my phone number. So a little time went past, and when I called, her mother said, "Oh, no, 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 this is no coincidence that you're calling now." I said, "Okay." So a few weeks went by and I didn't get a call, so I said, "Well, you know, she's an old woman." I said, "Maybe she lost my number." And here, I own my own business. I'm in the book everywhere. Anybody who wants to get in touch with me knows how and can. And so I said, "Well, let me give her a call back." So I called back and I dialed the number and the phone rang and it went to an answering machine. And there was a young woman's voice on the message on the answering machine, and I got nervous and fearful and hung up the phone. I sat there for a second and I said a prayer. I asked for God to give me the strength to go ahead and complete this phone call and just, you know, move on. And I did. And later that next day, my receptionist called me on the phone and said, "Steve, there's a woman on the phone who wants to talk to you. Her name is Janice. And she said you would know what it was about." And I said, "Okay." Okay. And here it was, I haven't seen her since 1975, and here it was 1998. And so that's quite a few years, 20 years later or so, and more than that. And she got on the phone, and I told her who I was, and she was real skeptical, you know, with identity theft and everything. And she told me that if I was who I said I was, you know, tell me something about me that only she would know. And I asked her how intimate she wanted me to be. And she knew by that I was who I said I was. So we agreed to meet, and I told her what I wanted to do. I told her what, you know, and just in a general way, what was going on. And she said, "Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great." So at the time, I was married to my third wife. And I went home, and I had been married to my third wife for 15 years prior to that. And got home and I told her what I was getting ready to do, and she understood. She said, "Yeah, okay, you need to do this for you. I understand." She said, "But I'm not real happy about this." I said, "I understand that." So anyway, flew up to Philadelphia, jumped in a car, drove to the Jersey Shore. I was supposed to meet her at the Flamingo, in the lobby of the Flamingo Hotel at 6 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. Got to the hotel early. Went down to the lobby about 5:45. I was standing there and I thought to myself, I said, "Man, I don't have my pager. I don't have my phone." I said, "Man, I wonder if I'm, you know, I hadn't talked to her in a couple of days. I wonder if she's even going to be here." So I went to the lobby and receptionist and the concierge. I asked, I said, "You know, my name is Steve." I said, "Have I had any calls?" And she said, "Yeah, as a matter of fact, I just put a call into your room. And it was, but it was from inside the hotel." I said, "Oh, good, she's here." So I went back by the elevators and I was waiting and pacing, and elevator door open, and I'd look and I said, "Ooh, I hope that's her." And then a little time would go past and the elevator door would open. And I said, ooh, I hope that's not her. Anyway, a few minutes later, elevator doors opened and out she poured, drunk as a skunk. I mean, ripped. So I said, oh, this is going to be great. So we went to the restaurant, the hotel, and we sat down and talked, got her some coffee, and we talked. And she was more, it was really good to see her. And Kimberly, my daughter, was supposed to be there, but she couldn't make it. She had a previous engagement that she couldn't break away from. But her mother told me that it was okay for her to give me my email, for me to give her my email address, and she had Kimberly's. So things went real well. That evening, we had dinner. We talked and talked and talked and talked and talked until it was wee hours in the morning. And she went to her hotel room and I went to mine. And the next morning we woke up, went out, had breakfast, and we drove back to her parents' house. Well, back to her house, where her mother was babysitting her two children from another marriage, from her third marriage. I got to fast forward because I don't. When I got back to work that Monday, I emailed Kimberly and sent this email out to her. It was probably a little mushy, but that's okay. It was what it was. And waited for a response. I just wanted to let her know that, you know, hey, regardless of whatever happened in the past, I just want you to know that if there's anything in this world that you need or anything that I can do for you, just please let me know. And if it's within my power, I'll try to do it. So we emailed back and forth for a few months, and then finally we decided that we were going to meet. And we decided we were going to meet at the Philadelphia Art Museum on a Saturday afternoon. I flew back up to Philly that morning, drove to the art museum, pulled in the parking lot, and the car pulled in a little ways in front of me, and a young lady got out and walked past the car, and I knew it was her. I said, that's Kimberly. She's got to see her walk. And she went up the steps. Went up to the top of the steps at the art museum and looked around, didn't see her, and turned around, and she was coming out of the museum. We walked towards each other, and she recognized me, and I recognized her, and we embraced and hugged, and we went inside and talked and set the matter straight. There were things that she was told that she evidently found out that weren't true, that I wasn't killed in an accident. She found out she was adopted, and to show you that how this thing really does work. After emailing and going back up and visiting one other time, I got a letter from her, a heartfelt letter telling me that, you know, this is wonderful, you know, it's all still so surreal. She's getting ready to start a new life with David, who she's getting ready to be married to. And I had met David. And if I didn't have any plans for October 2nd, that she would love for me to be at her wedding. That's wonderful. Yeah, that's great. So I went and I danced with her at her wedding. And I picked her mother up and her grandmother up and drove them to the wedding. The power of making these amends is absolutely tremendous. We're getting ready to read in just a minute, about these long periods of reconstruction that lie ahead. I still am in contact with her, not maybe once or twice a year at the most, sometimes not even that we do email each other. But the fact is that she knows that if she ever does need anything, that I'm willing, and if it's within my power to do it, I'll do it. And that's what's important about it. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, we're on page 83. Yes, there's a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we're sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They'll change in time. our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone.
You know, what I found with my family is, again, I've had the opportunity through the grace of God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to make amends to each one of them individually. You know, things in my family, you know, some of my family members still like to drink, and they're in what I call the lifestyle, you know. And you know, the beauty of it today is I can identify that those behaviors, excuse me, and be grateful that I'm not in the lifestyle anymore. I was talking to my current sponsor last week. I got into a situation with one of my brothers, you know, he basically, you know, told me just because he's my brother, I don't have to put up with unhealthy behavior. And that's something that I needed to hear, you know, because I can convince myself that I need a relationship with someone that's unhealthy, no matter who they are. And even further convince myself that if they're a family member, that it's my part to, you know, make it happen. And as with any relationship, family or not, it takes two people to make that relationship work. And, you know, the part here where it says the spiritual life is not a theory, you know, we have to live it. If I have any doubt at any time what the spiritual solution is, I just do the opposite of what I want to do. And my first inclination is the non-spiritual way, I can assure you. And, you know, it works 9 times out of 10, I'm here to tell you, because what I want to do is self-seeking and selfish. And, you know, some things that Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me is that in relationships especially, and I don't have perfect relationships today, but I do have healthy relationships in a lot of areas of my life. Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me that, you know, it's none of my business of what I think other people are thinking of me. Because I worried about that for a long, long time. And I ran my life by what I thought other people were thinking of me. That's a crazy way to live, I can tell you from my experience. I don't have to be right, and even when I'm right, I don't have to be right, and I don't have to point it out. And there's something that happens. I get some kind of sick gratification out of that sometimes when I'm right and I don't point it out. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe it's progress. I don't know, you know. And I don't have to have the last word, you know, as I ride off into the sunset. And remembering simple things like that that I have learned in Alcoholics Anonymous have helped me have healthier relationships today. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. When Janice and I were together, there was something that was more, when I was making my amends, there was something about me more interesting that she noticed. She said, why couldn't you know, you be like this then? You know, how come, you know, look at, you know, the things that you're trying to live a spiritual life, and, you know, why couldn't you do it then? Current relationships, living in unhealthy relationships, you know, I believe that we all have a right to be happy, and living in an unhealthy relationship where you're not happy. I was married to my third ex-wife. We were married for 28 years, and it ended up becoming an unhealthy, unhappy relationship. Being sober for just about half the length of time that we were married with someone who has another idea and is unwilling to do anything about her idea, and you go on with it for as long as you can, and it got to the point where I was trying to hold on to an old idea, and the result was nil. You know, so I had to end up doing what we ended up having to do. We both sat down and got honest about it and said, you know, we're not happy. So, you know, what are we going to do about this? So we decided to go ahead and get divorced. It isn't a pleasant feeling by any means, but there is something that's changed in both of us because of it. We're starting to become happy again. And that's what it's about. Yeah. And that may be the amends that I need to make with her, you know, is to for me to get out of her way so that she can be happy. I'm not the same person that I was when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I try not to treat people the same way that I did when I first got here. I try to be a little bit more compassionate, tolerant, and loving. I know that if it hadn't been for working these steps and trying to live these principles in my life, that wouldn't be the case at all. And I'm going to let you continue reading.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So we're going to wrap up on page 83. I'm going to read the last two paragraphs that we're going to consider tonight. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right, and we don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter, and there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past or wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we've gone, we'll see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We'll lose interest in selfish things and we'll gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We'll intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. So we got about 2 minutes, and start with Rodney. 2 minutes each.
Now, fortunately, I found Alcoholics Anonymous before all the people that I'd harmed had died, so I got to make my amends to the people that I you know had harmed, and you know I think that's a blessing really that I got to make them face to face and ask for forgiveness, because every single one of them forgave me, and you know they encouraged me to continue whatever it is I was doing. You know, whatever it is you're doing, just keep doing it. and I said, I don't know, man. I'm making coffee, you know. That's all I know. the promises, wow, I got like 40 seconds. you know, when I came in here, that's one of the things I paid a lot of attention to when they read the promises at the beginning of the meeting. And after a while, when I was able to think about something other than myself for a millisecond, I started to hear the promises, and I started to think, man, I never had those things in my life. I always regretted the past. I always tried to shut the door on it, but it kept opening and beating me up, you know. In the most inopportune times, I'm riding down the road one day and it says, and my conscience says, man, you shouldn't have done that, you know. And then I feel like crap the rest of the day. So, you know, I never knew peace, you know. Since I've come here, my whole attitude and outlook upon life has changed quite a bit. I learned how to be grateful. The relationship that I was explaining earlier with my daughter, she came to live with me in 2007 and moved back here. I had the opportunity to help her get a college education, something that I didn't get. Right now she's renting a house from me because she didn't want to move to Portsmouth. I didn't get what I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't get back what I came to Alcoholics Anonymous to get back. Thank goodness. I'd have sold myself short. I've gotten remarried to a girl that I believe in my heart I should have always been with, you know. And when I stop looking, I have a daughter who will be 25 next month, and a son who just turned 8 months. And you know, people say, "Wow, better you than me," and I think, "Yeah, better me," you know, because I mean, it doesn't bother me. I don't look at it like, you know, it's a blessing, you know, it's a blessing. I get, you know, he gets to see me sober, you know, as long as I continue to do what I'm supposed to be doing, he's going to have a great life, you know, and hopefully I'll get the opportunity to let him learn from my mistakes. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Rodney. It was September 18th, 1997. When I decided I needed to go to an AA meeting for myself, 1997. And I walked into, a friend of mine had a meeting list, found a meeting on Friday night at 7:30 at Maryview Hospital. I said, "Oh, that's a good meeting." I said, "It's on a Friday night." That meeting I went to back in 1975 was on a Friday night. I said, "No." I said, "It's at a hospital." I said, "That's good." The meeting I went to in 1975 was at a hospital. I said, "It must be a good meeting." So I decided to go to the meeting, and I walked through the door, and the young lady who was chairing that meeting, her eyes were bright, her hair was beautiful, beautiful shiny hair, blonde hair, and she was chairing the meeting, and she handed me a piece of paper, and I said, "Oh, so this is my first AA meeting." I said, "I don't know what in the world's going on." And she said, "These are the promises." She says, "And we read these at the end of the meeting. Do you know how to read?" I said, "Yeah, I didn't have to read." So she handed me the promises to read. And I went and I sat down. She pointed to where the coffee and the cookies were. And I sat down at the meeting, and they opened up the meeting just like they do every other meeting I've ever attended. And during that meeting, I must have read the promises at least a dozen times to make sure that I was going to know all the words when she called on me to read it. I didn't want to feel stupid. But there were things I was reading in those promises that I just knew. I said, "You gotta be kidding me." I said, "This is what this is about? You know, these things?" I said, "The feeling of uselessness and self-pity must slip away. I'm totally going to know how to handle situations that used to baffle me. The fear of people and economic insecurities are going to leave me." Yeah, right. But something truly miraculous happened that night, and it's happened at every single Alcoholics Anonymous meeting I've ever attended. When I walked out of that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that night, my life had changed. I hadn't gone back out, haven't had to pick up another white chip. I've got one sponsor, I've had one home group. Something truly miraculously happened. I didn't find it necessary to pick up and take another drink from that day on. I found a place where you understood me exactly. It wasn't maybe, it wasn't maybe a little bit, it was exactly. You knew how I felt. And even equally as important to me was that I knew how you felt. I finally found a place where I could be understood. And I got a lot of hope out of that. And that's what keeps me coming back, you know, because I need you people in my life to help me stay sober. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you very much, Rodney and Steve. Thanks for so much for sharing with us. Mm-hmm. We're going to pass the self-supporting baskets. We do support AA as a whole, and we support the local service structure. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, and while the contributions cover each group's rent and expenses, The seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, which is to help alcoholics who still suffer. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites groups around the world. And for our announcements, we are hosting Supper and a Speaker on Monday, July 28th, 6 o'clock potluck. Please bring something if you'd like. And 7 o'clock, we'll be coming from Richmond to speak. And that, again, is Monday, July 28th, right here in this room. And anybody else announcements?
Are there flyers for that event?
Why, yes, sir. I think they're on all the chairs. Please do take a flyer. They've been left on your chair, so please take one and share it with your friends. If everybody brings one or two people who's here tonight, we'll have a full house, and that's really what we want. We want to be together, and we want to have a full house, so help us make that happen. Anything else? Nothing, really? Okay, yes. West Gent?
Yeah.
So West Gent's having their anniversary dinner on July 2nd at 6:30. Speaker at 8, Linda T. from the Big Book Topic Group that meets Friday nights in Hampton will be the speaker. And that's at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church, 1009 West Princess Anne Road. It's over there in West Gent, hence the name West Gent. Okay. Newcomers, do we have anybody in the room who this is their first AA meeting, or you are less than 30 days without a drink? We'd just like to get to know you. Anybody? No, all seasoned, sober people tonight, okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining your home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands, please. We have literature available here on the table. Please help yourself to that. Sponsorship is important to us, and it's important in AA, as you heard tonight. We urge you don't delay. If you have questions or would like to get additional information about sponsorship in AA, we have two, David and Casey are going to be up here at the table, and they'll be happy to talk with you about finding a sponsor, what is a sponsor, any question that you might have about that. And thanks again for both of you coming tonight. That's a lot of tough stuff to talk about. Thanks. And thank you to everybody who participated tonight by showing up here. We do meet together at the meeting, after the meeting, at Plaza del Sol, which is on 22nd Street, just across
21st Street.
Yeah. So we encourage everybody to attend there so we can get our directions.
That's right.
Okay. Anybody who wants to join us in closing
meeting,
that's right. Like Columbia, look at that. On the right hand side of the road.
Okay, so thank you. We'll have a moment of silence, and then we'll say the Lord's Prayer together. Heaven, would you like to do that?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory,